condition, my condition was ill.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
It's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new... So, that's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis.
I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
The f*** you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown.
Hello and welcome to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howell. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 5. Dow Futures up 71. NASDAQ Futures down 9. So kind of a mixed bag after yet another up day yesterday. Kevin, how are you?
Good morning. Living the good life here in Southwest Michigan.
Well, you watched the Irish. I thought they were going to win yesterday. They did not. Illinois looked good. I don't know if you watched any of those.
Yep. Yeah, you know what the oddball game was? Was the Boston College, who were they playing? Minnesota. That was a tight game at the half. And then Boston College came out in the second half, ran out to a 15-point lead, and lost it, and lost the game in overtime.
So
that was one of the Big Ten ACC challenge games that's just mystifying. I can't imagine... being a Boston College, I don't think anybody's really a Boston College fan.
Hey,
anyway, but I can't imagine being how PO'd I'd be if I were a BC fan.
And then on the other side, Purdue, I don't know if you saw this, they had a 20-point lead in the second half down at Miami and then blew that and lost.
Yeah, and Miami was playing up without their point guard, who's a really good player, Chris Likes.
Yeah, so those were two games that you thought were in the other column that ended up switching.
Well, what about if you're a Purdue fan? Wow.
Yeah, that's what I just said.
And they actually do have Purdue basketball fans.
They do.
A lot of them.
Our buddy Billy over at the series is he and his brother are Purdue alumni. He was a swimmer there. So, yeah, he's very much into it. So a lot of guys are. By the way, before you beat up on Boston College, they get a pretty good crowd watching. Well, when they used to, when you could go into the place, they used to get a pretty good crowd at the Tripoli watching their football games.
Oh, I'm sure you could get them to watch their football games, at least to some extent. But it's hockey. I mean, that's really the sport that BC alumni love.
Well, that's true. But the
and they should, because they have a really good hockey program.
So you as you wandered off to Notre Dame like me, there's a massive Jesuit connection here in Chicago. A lot of the Ignatius people, a lot of Loyola people go off to Boston College. It was actually a huge Chicago-Boston College contingent.
Just like there's a huge Boston-Notre Dame contingent.
Yeah. But the Jesuits...
Yeah, so you get a lot of the people out of the Jesuit... Well, it's all the Jesuit colleges that get fed by Jesuit high school. So, you know, it's Marquette. It's even University of Detroit.
Detroit.
Among them, Gonzaga, Santa Clara... I think University of San Francisco. I mean, you go around the country, Loyola, you know, the various Loyolas, all of them, and the Jesuits, the Jesuit guidance departments are very good about feeding their own schools.
Well,
Creighton is one, I believe, as well.
Creighton is.
There's one in New Orleans too, right?
Yeah, there's a Loyola New Orleans.
The
St. Louis University,
in fact,
I think. Too.
You know, little story about that is when I was a senior in high school, some friends and I took a road trip, and you know, one of the guys was a golfer, and he wanted to look at some schools where he might actually play NCAA golf. So we visited Duke and North Carolina, and I think Georgia Tech, and you know, a bunch of Southwestern schools. So we headed to the Southeast. Then we made our way across to Birmingham, where there were four of us on the trip. And one of the guy's cousins lived in Birmingham, so we stayed overnight there, and then picked up with his cousins and headed to New Orleans. And we were there for the Sugar Bowl, and we stayed because one of the other guys on the trip's uncle was a teacher at Loyola New Orleans, so we stayed for like $4 a night or something like that in a dorm on their campus.
Did you get food?
We saw the. We saw Oklahoma play Auburn, and it was Pat Sullivan had won the Heisman Trophy at Auburn, and then you had Oklahoma with Jack Mildren and Greg Pruitt and Joe Wiley and all wow. Those guys, and they went ahead and just beat the tar out of Auburn. And you know, Pruitt went on to a pretty good career. Mildren went on from being an option quarterback to being a longtime defensive back in the NFL. And that year, that was the year Nebraska won it with Johnny Rogers, and you've told that story enough times.
Yeah.
But Nebraska with one loss, Nebraska undefeated. One loss, Oklahoma, who only lost to Nebraska, wound up number two, and number three was Colorado, who had only lost to Oklahoma and Nebraska.
Colorado's
a
good
team. That was the 1-2-3 in the final polls. And the final interesting tidbit about that is one of my high school teammates was being recruited by Colorado, and that abruptly ended when they climbed up the polls at the end, and he wound up going to Minnesota.
God, my cousin went to Colorado out of Tilden Tech back in the 50s, and he never even saw the place. The quarterback from Tilden was highly recruited, and somehow or another they said, "Well, like bring your halfback with you or something." So my cousin takes the train out there, never even saw the place, and he gets there, and all of a sudden his roommate, who's the quarterback, is packing his bags. He goes, "Where are you going?" He goes, "I got a better deal from Iowa or someplace. Let's go." And he goes, "I just got here. I'm staying." How do I know they want me in Iowa? You know? So he ended up staying at Colorado for 4 years and was a starter. Said it was interesting. He ran track. And I don't know if he was a... Well, he was pretty fast, obviously, but he ran the relays. And he said it was so well. They'd have a track meet, and he'd be in his football uniform spring practice, and they'd say, "It's time for your race." A bunch of guys would get around him, and he'd peel off his football uniform, throw on his track shoes, run over, race, come back. They'd get around him again. He'd put his football uniform back on and go back out to practice. So it wasn't like as segmented as things are today.
Yeah, it was different times.
Different times.
Different times when it came to that kind of stuff.
Hey, speaking of which, I sent you
there really was an element of student athlete. It was changing fast. There were elements of it at least.
Well, he said you had your guy. They took care of you. And they did go to a bowl game. They went to the Orange Bowl. He says, "You're down there with, like, curfews." You know, he said it was a nice time. You know, a good place for dinner and stuff every night. As the Bulls take care of everybody. But he said the people from the university, it was just bizarre. Talk about shrimp and booze every night. They're partying all week long. And the players are actually trying to play. It was so weird. But I'm sure none of that's changed. Just saying.
Doubtful.
Hey, I sent you some stuff yesterday. I didn't have a chance to get at it, but some of it's very interesting because we've talked about this. We haven't in a while with all the other crap we've talked about. What's the story with this Nike kind of piling in on Under Armour at UCLA? Now, do you think that's has something to do with Under Armour wanting out of these things? Or let me pull an article up here, but it's pretty fascinating. I mean, we've talked about it on the show before. I don't know if anybody remembers, because it's been a while, because we have reported on these, whatever you want to call them. I guess they're more than shoe deals now, right?
Apparel deals.
And
partnerships. How's that?
How's that for...
That's what they like to call them anyway.
Yeah.
There are partners. Oh, baloney.
Yeah, oh, please. Well, this one is Evidently, UCLA, I'm going to have to reboot this thing because it doesn't want to come up here. But UCLA, after 1 year, they're getting booted. They're going with Nike instead of Under Armour, and I don't even know if does Under Armour even care. I guess is the question.
Well, it's about UCLA. it's a good question.
Well, if they pay too much, I mean, they just they're going to squeal, but they might just say this is the best thing ever happened to us. The question is Notre Dame right behind them?
Well, Notre Dame seems pretty entrenched. I don't know what to make of it, other than they seem pretty well committed to that relationship. But it looks to me like I can't tell if Under Armour is looking at this and saying I got a really really bad deal and I'm happy to let him go, or if you just have Nike just trying to worm their way in and say go ahead, you know, sue us. Go ahead, try it. If you can make it happen, make it happen. But when you sign a deal that's like 15 years, you sort of think that any decent contract is going to have a termination for convenience clause in there that's going to require certainly giving back a lot of money, if not in the first place paying damages for breach.
But something. This is a. I'll just be brief with this, but then we can obviously take it apart. UCLA has signed a new 6-year apparel deal with Nike and its Jordan brand. Evidently, they have a separate Jordan brand. A replacement to its Under Armour contract that is now the subject of a wider legal dispute. Under the agreement, which takes place next July, Nike will supply footwear and apparel to all 25 UCLA teams, with football and both men's and women's basketball bearing the Jordan brand. Evidently, that's different, I guess. Terms of the deal weren't announced. Back in 2016, so 4 years ago now, UCLA signed a 15-year, $280 million contract with Under Armour. At the time, one of the largest apparel deals in NCAA history. Earlier this year, Under Armour informed UCLA of its intent to terminate the deal, and the school later filed a $200 million suit against a Baltimore company citing breach of contract. So Under Armour was the one who said they wanted out. They had signed up.
Who's claiming the breach?
UCLA. Because Under Armour said they would terminate it. I remember when these were all signed, Kevin. We were doing the show, and we talked about, I think, Manny, didn't we even add up one day the cost of, didn't Under Armour do Northwestern first? Then UCLA, then Notre Dame?
That sounds right, yeah. They've been with Maryland from the beginning, too. Obviously, they're Maryland, they have a big Maryland company. Are they based in Maryland?
That I don't
Under
know.
Armour? Or are they UK?
Well, I know the Northwestern.
I think Maryland was their first Power 5 school, but then, yeah, they went to Northwestern, they went to UCLA, and they went to Notre Dame.
Well, didn't they sign up to do all the shoes and stuff at Northwestern before they even had shoes? So they rushed some shoes out and didn't, I don't know, was this coach or some other coach was complaining that they had all these knee injuries and they thought they were part of the result of the shoes?
The rushing the shoes part of that, but I do know that in the beginning, Northwestern, especially basketball, was not at all happy with the Under Armour shoes, the quality of the shoe.
I think football was even worse. Anyway, but they had some issues that come out of the gate. But Under Armour, I mean, they appear to be wanting out of it. But it was a huge chunk of their marketing budget. I mean, it was in the, well, if you got, you know, $10, $15 million a school. Now, does that include the cost of the stuff? I don't know, and you got, you know, 10 schools. That's a lot of dough.
It is, and I am sure that there was a time when Under Armour was trying to just gain share, whatever cost,
right,
to get market share. And that's, you know, you see that business strategy sometimes, and it can work. Except that they were at the same time they're setting this precedent for, you know, they're setting a market price that then once they start to get some traction in the market, everybody else wants the same deal. And, you know, so the question now gets to be, okay, how long can I go on in doing that? And then is it really getting me all of the retail sales that I want? And if it's not, you know, how many people, how many people are brand conscious about Nike and how many people are brand conscious about Under Armour when it comes to the expensive items? You know, you can, Under Armour originally started out as, you know, thermal stuff.
Yeah.
And they probably have a pretty good share in that. But how many people say, oh, I got to go out and get me the latest Under Armour shoes?
Well, I mean, a lot of it comes down to depending on the school. I mean, if you've got a bazillion people showing up, which obviously, I guess that's another question, maybe a Matty question, but what do you suppose the drop-off, just to, I'll start from the beginning, or at least trying to, when Champion was the Notre Dame brand, they were forever. All the time I was in school, 20-some years later, if you went to the bookstore, you bought a Champion. And it was really high-quality stuff. But basically everything Notre Dame sold through the bookstore, through the little booths at the game, all this, I mean, the incredible amount of crap that, you know, 60 to 80,000 people now they got the new place, go down there and buy. I mean, I don't know if they average a t-shirt a person. When Dave Murphy's down there, they probably average two t-shirts a person.
two per person.
I mean, all that stuff is now that brand. Now, I don't think Under Armour ever got the exclusive the Champion had, because I've gone to the bookstore maybe once or twice since they've got the deal, and you can still buy other brands in there when it was strictly a champ. But I'm saying this year, all these guys got to be taking this hit, because I mean what is the, I mean, when I was at, went down to the Ohio State game years ago, I couldn't wait to buy an Ohio State hat, or else I'd be the only person in the place without one. So I bought one. I did buy a gray one instead of a crazy red one, but it was an Ohio State.
You know, sometimes, yeah, though, Tom, you just got to stand up for what's right.
Let's put it this way, wouldn't you?
Which means not wearing an Ohio State hat.
Well, my mother's cousin's wife, of course, dug out all some of her stuff and has, like, sweaters for Audrey to wear. Oh, you got to dress all the way. So I said, I'll buy a hat, darn. I didn't buy a red one. But the weird part is I'm walking along in Michigan City, and this old codger, he's older than me, walks by and he goes, O-H. I go, huh? O-H. What are you saying? I'm supposed to say I-O. That's the greeting for Ohio State fans. If you walk down the sidewalk and you see a brother Ohio State guy, you're supposed to go, O-H, and he goes, I-O. It's like, you know.
It's like,
yeah,
that.
I know. It's because Ohio State fans are proud to know the alphabet.
Yeah. It's like the Marines, you know, type of thing.
Illinois does that, I-L-L-I-N-I.
Really?
Yeah.
I-N-I, and if you do Michigan State, you hear the go green, go white.
Oh, yep, yeah, that's right.
Well, I sent you guys another one. This is interesting. It's a kind of a tag-along here to a story I read many, many years ago. It had to do with, of course, you know, it's probably all changed now with the proliferation of credit cards and student loans and all the other stuff, but somebody somewhere, I mean many, many years ago, did a big study about how people were, and how much money people needed to make them comfortable. In other words, how far over your skis was the average family in terms of their budget, in terms of their how much they spent versus their comfort level and so forth. It was pretty interesting. Whoever did it, it was like a doctoral thesis. The guy, I think it was a guy, it might have been a lady, but, or it might have been some people together, basically went through a whole routine, and they came out and said that no matter what level of income you are, whether you're making, you know, 25 grand a year or whether you're making 2 million a year, that pretty much everybody's on the edge the same amount. And that if you say to everybody, okay, look, what would I have to give you to make life comfortable? I mean, not winning the lottery kind of crap. Just regular stuff. And the amazing part was the people concluded who wrote it that everybody needed about 20% of 1 year's paycheck to cover them. It would cover the credit card bill they didn't really want. It would cover the furniture somebody bought that they didn't really want. And it would set them up for 4 days in Arizona or someplace, or Florida for a nice weekend, and just flatten things out. That if you made 50 grand, you wanted 10. If you made 500 grand, you wanted 100. It was pretty interesting that it's all about percentages and not really how much you make. Well, anyway, I spotted this thing yesterday in Yahoo, and some guy, Sam Dogan. You ever heard of Financial Samurai? I think I've heard the name, but I never watched it.
No, he's not familiar.
This is about the Webbers. How to make $500,000 a year and still feel average.
Oh, yeah. You sent that out.
And, it's people who live in a city. Obviously these guys are in New York, but it could be happening here if you're in the Gold Coast or someplace. And they went through people's, you know, what they spend on stuff, and it's pretty fast. You know what the weird part is the, how much, if you make $500, they got them and the wife making $250 apiece. So the two 401k contributions total up to $36,000. So then your salary after that is $464. And they said between state and federal, your effective tax rate is 40%, which is a lot. You know, so you're down to, now this isn't including property taxes, I assume. So you're down to 278 right out of the gate. So the 500, no, obviously the 401k contribution is still yours. You're down to 278. And then, but then the expenses here, when you look at them, they look crazy, but they add up. The child care, $42,000. Of course, our friend Frank said he'll watch the kids for $42,000.
Yeah, hey, I'll watch them for $41,500.
Yeah. Food for four, which includes a date night every 2 weeks, $23,000.
By the way, that $42,000 for two kids is not that far off.
No, I don't think it is.
My buddy told me it's a second mortgage because he has two kids. He pays two mortgages, one for the house and one for the two kids going to daycare.
Well, one of the
Means once you start subtracting taxes and all of that kind of stuff, you're one of the parents is essentially working for free.
Well, funny you should mention that, Kevin. When I was chairman of the marketing committee over at the SIBO for a few years, and I obviously got to know the people in the marketing area, and one of the ladies was there's a couple of guys got ran in the department, and we had two or three ladies that were absolutely spectacular, and they were, you know, moms, and it worked. And I'm going to say this is 1998. I bet she was making 80-ish, maybe, somewhere in there, maybe 70-ish. And she lived in one of the burbs. And she said they did everything straight with their child care lady, that between the train fare, the extra car they needed, that lady, her clothes, all the other stuff, that she thinks she netted like $15,000 or something. She just wanted to work and stay in the game. That it absolutely.
Well, and at some point, as the kids get older, you've invested in the career at that point too, so that you're not starting from scratch at age 35 or 40 or whatever age that it winds up being.
Right, but I mean, it is definitely.
There's some economic argument in favor of it, but. You know, boy, there's some strong economic argument for just, saying bag it. And now, with the ability to do more at home, and I'm not even talking about sent home for 2020 disease, there is the ability to conduct a business at home. And I could really envision that becoming, getting its traction anyway without the COVID restrictions. And now we're so damn used to it that I think you're going to see that's going to actually create opportunities for stay-at-home parents.
Well, the economic lesson here is, especially for people, and I'm not making lifestyle choices for anybody, because today it's the guy stays home sometimes as much as the lady. Mr. Mom is, the same. But the economic lesson here is that this in the 50s, 60s, where inevitably the mother stayed home, again, not always, but most of the time, stayed home and did, whatever, child care, did the cleaning, did the cooking, did the tutoring, did all those things. This is how you, when you count economic numbers, you should always be aware of stuff like this, which, of course, not many people are. There's a cost to all that. I mean, if your mom didn't cook, if she didn't keep the place clean, if she didn't watch the kids, somebody else would have to do it. It just was not counted. So that's it's like when you look at the Chinese growth rate versus ours. If all of a sudden your mom from the 60s heads off to work and gets paid doing something else and pays people to do all the other stuff that she used to do, you essentially pick up all this now is counted. Because you're paying somebody else. Where before, it wasn't counted, even though the function was still being done, right? So it's not like, I mean, your 50s stay-at-home mom was an economic partner to the place, just not counted. And I think, people...
Right, and now when you pay somebody to do that, it's counted.
Right. Well, anyway, some of these other ones. Property taxes, $20,000. With $1,500,000 home, it can't be in New York or Chicago. Property insurance, three vacations a year, though, that I like, $18,000. Car payment, of course, they got the BMW 5 Series and the Land Cruiser, it's $10,000. Gas, $5,000. Anyway, the guy comes out with, after all his stuff, he's got his savings are now $7,000 a year. So he's not doing so hot.
Well, the first thing I'd do is cut out a vacation there.
There you go. Do you bring the kids with?
Look, as you start to do things, that was the one that jumped off the page of me. I get the challenge there, and the point being made, but ultimately you are making some choices, and that's totally a discretionary spend.
True.
So I don't take three vacations a year.
Yeah, but you don't make a half a mil either. You got to get all of the Joneses.
That's true.
Plus, they got him paying $32,000 in student loan debt for him and the wife. That's a lot. SP Futures
up. I suppose we should talk about student loans when we get back from break.
Yeah, we got SP Futures up 5, NASDAQ Futures down 14. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here.
Hello, welcome to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Alex, Mr. Matt Weber. Mr. Kevin O'Neill has got an email from one of our listeners who is sitting in one of the parking lots on the North Shore trying to get a petition signed to recall Governor Pritzker. What do you think of that, mate?
To recall him for what?
Throw him out.
No, I know what recall means. I said for what?
Well, for just being a buffoon.
Well, I think that's what elections are for.
Well, you can. Sometimes you don't want to wait.
He hasn't broke the law, as far as I know.
Well, the story is, why is his local flower shop closed and the people out of business, and yet Target gets to sell flowers?
That's a good question.
It really makes you wonder if Jay doesn't have.
I didn't know flower shops were closed.
Well, they were back in, everything was closed.
Well, everything was closed for a couple weeks, yeah, but everything reopened.
I don't know what the story is.
I get the 30 days or whatever that Target and Walmart got to stay open.
It was way more than 30 days.
In April, that was a problem. I agree with that.
It was way more than 30 days.
I don't think it was very much longer than that.
Anyway, S&P futures up 5, NASDAQ futures down 16, Dow futures up 79. We've got over in Europe. I mean, the market's been strong. I mean, we just continue to move up, and we had DoorDash came out yesterday with some massive stocks, IPO stocks priced at 102, which is an awful lot more than times earnings, or not just earnings, but revenue. I don't know. People are going crazy. This reminds me so much of 2000. I sure hope we don't have the same result. DAX up 113.8%, FTSE up 18.2%, CAC around up 8.2%, so bullish over there as well. Nikkei up 350, that's 1.3%. Shanghai down 38, that's 1.1%. Hang Seng up 198.7%. So, review yesterday, Dow was up 100, S&P up 10, NASDAQ up 62, bonds. 0.94, up 3 basis points, making their move towards 1%. Bund minus 0.59. The Bund refuses. Our stuff's up from like 0.7 something, or 0.8 to 0.94. The Bund has not moved at all. Japan, positive 0.01. They have not moved either. Oil up 12 cents, 45.72. Brent up 18, 49.02. Natural gas up 8 cents, 248. RBOB unchanged at 126. And we've got gold down 13 bucks. 1861, silver down 45 cents, 24.28, and copper up a penny, 3.51. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a pretty good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. In fact, no delays at all on the Edens or Kennedy. Eisenhower is looking good. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways have been quiet all morning. There's a couple of issues off the expressways. Looks like the exit ramp at Lower Wacker Drive on the southbound side at Congress is closed. All traffic is being forced onto Harrison. Doesn't say why. It says an incident. So we'll have to learn what that incident is. Then out west of there on Congress at Cicero, there's a crash involving a dump truck that has crews on the scene. And that's right off the Eisenhower on Congress and Cicero. And then down south, there is an accident investigation on 47th Street between Southwestern and South Damon due to a fatal overnight accident that happened on 46th Street. The driver reportedly hit a tree. So not sure more, you know, detailed than that, but not good. And that has 47th Street closed between Western and Damon. Weather today, it's going to be a very pleasant day for December 9th. Sunny skies, a high of 49, and then tomorrow we'll be in the low 50s, so that'll be nice. Right now it is clear and 35 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 79 today. Right now it's clear and 52. In sports, it was a rare Tuesday night football game last night, but a game nonetheless to wrap up Week 12 in the NFL, and it was the Ravens doubling up the Cowboys 34-17. There was a busy White Sox news yesterday from the winter meetings. The White Sox signed Adam Eaton, who rejoins the ball club after being with the Nationals the last couple of years, to a one-year $7 million deal. White Sox also have a club option for $8.5 million in year two, should they so choose to exercise that. And the White Sox also acquired Lance Lynn, the veteran right-hander who's 33 years old. Had 1 year left on his deal with the Texas Rangers. White Sox acquired him in a trade, sending 25-year-old pitching prospect Dane Dunning along with another prospect for 1 year of Lance Lynn at $9.3 million left on his contract. He, of course, was a rookie for the Cardinals during Tony La Russa's last year as the Cardinals manager. So they're reunited on the south side. And finally, it was a busy night in college hoops. The ACC Big Ten Challenge was underway, night one of two, and the Big Ten dominated, going 6-1 out of the seven games. Illinois had no problem with Duke down in Durham, North Carolina. 83-68 was the final in that one. Notre Dame blew an 8-point halftime lead and lost to Ohio State 90-85. The only Big Ten loss was by Purdue, as we mentioned at the top of the show. They had a 20-point lead in the second half down in Miami and blew that one. But Iowa beat North Carolina, Penn State was a winner, Rutgers was a winner, and Minnesota came back to beat Boston College in overtime. Chief.
I was murdering North Carolina for a while.
Yeah, they ended up winning by 13, but they were up double digits most of the way, and then they actually blew the lead in the second half very briefly. North Carolina came back and took a one-point lead, and then Iowa blew it back up to double digits, and that was it.
The interesting stuff. Definitely. I mean,
doesn't Luca Garza have a striking resemblance to Lurch?
He does. He's got the eyebrows for sure.
And now I'll give you a little tidbit of information. Ted Cassidy, the actor who played Lurch, was a college basketball player. I forget what college. It was a fairly lower level, but he and Garza had almost the same stats exactly. They were both like 17 and 10, something like that, for their averages. So maybe it's reincarnation of some sort.
he was cloned. You never know.
Yeah,
okay.
I'm just waiting for for him to look at a referee when he gets a bad call and go, oh.
Well, what do you make of what do you suppose? Let's talk about this for a second, because we got other stuff to talk about. You see the White Sox making these deals, and the Cubs sort of not. Not sort of not. They're in.
Just not.
And you wonder what the economics of baseball has changed in the last year or so. I mean, the Cubs allege, of course, the Cubs have huge expenses because they keep trying to, take over the entire neighborhood. And they spent a lot of money on the park. I mean, there's no doubt about that. I mean, like millions on the park. Last year, I'm going to say the Cubs, with no fans in the stands, I'm going to say that they draw as high a percentage of revenue from fans in the stands as just about anybody, or fans in the neighborhood. There's probably 10 teams on that level. The Dodgers probably zero to Bo Sox. Now, the Sox, on the other hand, I'm going to say that given their last time I read about their lease, I don't think they had to pay any rent last year because they didn't draw a million people. So I think the Sox were pretty much free. Now, I'm sure they must pay groundskeepers and stuff. I'm not positive, but I think the Sox relatively made out like a bandit last year. No, because now they're signing people, and I think if there's nobody in the stands again this year, I think the Sox are net winners over the Cubs.
Well, that may be part of the equation. I don't know. I do know that the White Sox don't have nearly the payroll that the Cubs have, or didn't, and then on top of it, had more expiring. Some of the pricier guys that they had that they had signed to short term deals, their contracts expired, so they're just replacing them. But I also don't think Lance Lynn is that expensive. As an example, Adam Eaton was not that expensive. So those may be really good moves, but they're not high price moves.
Well, I mean, when the Cubs just got rid of Schwarber and another outfielder, I don't see anybody coming in.
Yeah, well, Schwarber wasn't expensive. I think they got rid of Schwarber because he doesn't hit the ball.
He was on Theo's good list. I don't know if he's on the new manager's good list.
Yeah, I always read
that. Well, maybe not, but, he's got a long-standing problem. We've talked about it on this show. His problem isn't that he doesn't hit the ball hard when he hits it. It's just that he doesn't hit it often enough. He's got one of the highest swing and miss rates in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think I've read that he was a Theo guy to the point where Theo had to convince, Jed and McLeod and some of the other guys that this was our guy, and I don't think they were as sold on him. And I think that Theo might have had somewhat of a blind eye to him because he was kind of his guy and kind of ignored all the holes that everyone else saw. And then once Theo left, I think Jed was like, he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a...
So, hey, just a little bit of COVID-19 news. Did I not predict that the governor here in Michigan would extend the her three-week order?
Well, they can't... It's become a total contest for them, and they claim it's all about the science. But I can really, like I said, I listened to that one, much as I'm not much of a fan, I listened to that one press conference on a Sunday. I'm driving back from Audrey's, and somehow or another, it was a press conference regarding COVID with Pritzker. And it just so happened, this is not attempting to be sexist, that the five or six news media people that had the mic were all female. They were on this guy like white on rice. I mean, what do you mean you're not going to close bars? Other states have done it. You don't care about people dying? I mean, they were just on him like if he was the redheaded nephew. And And the idea that Kevin in North Dakota closes the bars at 9 and somebody else closes them at 8 and you don't close them at 7, you're just vilified at these things. I mean, it's the whole idea of leadership is just, I mean, they're all doing what the other person's doing without any regard to whether it's working or not. I mean, I don't, if you can do something that will stop people from dying and catching things, you know, hey, you know what? Let's try something. But the idea that everything these guys do, I mean, if it's all working, they've been doing it now for 9 months, how could things be any worse?
Yeah, if it's working, we sure as heck aren't seeing it. In the case of Michigan, there's two things. One of the things, one of her justifications was, well, we're about to hit the 14-day mark after Thanksgiving, and we're expecting to see it spike up.
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you, first off, that's not the case. If you go on the state of Michigan's own dashboard and look, it wouldn't magically turn up after 14 days. It would ramp up to some kind of a peak at 14 days, and it's actually been falling. So that's baloney. But the other thing, and this is what really bugs me about it more than anything else, is she knew what 14 days after Thanksgiving, when that was going to happen, when she issued the order in the first place. And so she knew darn well that she was going to extend it back then. If this is the logic behind it, then she's got to extend it at that point, and so she knew darn well. It's the same as that, you know, initial 3 weeks, 15 days to stop the bend the curve or flatten the curve, I guess is the lingo we used. It's a lie. It's a lie from the start, and it drives me nuts that they keep doing this, and that it's so many people now. We got a lot of pushback in the state here, but so many people just accept it. And they said, well,
people are dying. People are dying.
This will all end when people start acting like adults and wearing masks.
Yeah.
Wait a minute here.
Well, I wore a mask and I got it, so I'm not.
Yeah.
But it's.
So, well, and I don't go in any stores or anything where people aren't wearing masks.
Yeah.
it's just total abject nonsense. And this is how we're, how we're conducting the business of the country at the moment, and it's just maddening.
In immortal words,
I push back where I can, but honestly, I don't do much living in Michigan other than my house is here. I'm a mile from Indiana. All of my shopping and everything is in Indiana. The only thing I do here is I have a couple of favorite restaurants that I like on the Michigan side of the border, and I try to patronize them for carryout because they're independently owned, and I don't want them to die.
The immortal words of George Stigler, who's dear departed, actually my favorite professor. He says, if I could see more people ranting and raving, this is in the 70s, about especially a bunch of old white businessmen about how politics should be run like a business. And how much better it would be, because look how great businesses run, which is all BS anyway. He says the issue is that it is run like a business. It's the business of politics, and the people making that statement just don't understand the business of politics. It's run exactly like the business of politics. And it's all about the governors getting out in front of something, doing something, and then telling everybody how well it worked, and how good they were, how decisive they were. And you just keep rolling with it. It has nothing to do with whether there's no P&L there. Cuomo's probably going to walk his way into the White House someday because of the stupid stuff he did in New York. But it's all about perception, right? And it has to do with whether or not you can get out in front of the curve. If somebody says, I'm closing the bars at 9, you close them all the way. And then you say, look at what happened. The entire downtick in the curve is because I closed the bars. Without any proof whatsoever that anybody got them there before or after. same thing with this alderman in Chicago, this Tom Tunney. He owns Ann Sather's. Well, for those that people don't know, Ann Sather's got bakery goods and stuff. There's a lot of people in the neighborhood that, I won't say are street people, but they're close to it, to where they'll stop off at Ann Sather's and sit at the counter and get a cup of coffee and a donut, and like that's their breakfast. They're there every day. okay, to throw all those people out. There's no science that said those people got COVID sitting at the counter against the others. None whatsoever. And yet, oh man, this guy's at his place open. He's letting people inside. You know, what's he doing? He doesn't care about the... I mean, it's insane, Kevin, but it's not going away. It's going away. You know what? I did want to ask you, speaking of politics, I was reading yesterday that a lot of the stimulus package that's on again, off again, it's been off again now for months, has to do with big differences between the Republicans and the Democrats regarding embedded immunity for COVID. And I don't know if you've been reading any of that, but I don't know that you want to open up the entire court system to I came to work and the elevator didn't allow somebody to be 6 feet apart. I caught COVID, even though God knows what else I did with my time, and I'm blaming you. I don't know that we need that deal, but I don't know how you.
Tom, it's the equivalent, essentially, of being able to sue because you got the flu really bad.
Yeah.
You didn't provide for the flu season.
Yeah, except there aren't specific rules about the flu. These guys have put these rules out there. That's what makes me very concerned when somebody says, say, six feet apart, when there's no real judgment that says 6 feet does anything or doesn't versus five or seven, and it doesn't take account of somebody who's got an elevator that is 5.5 feet across. They're not past laws. They're guidelines. Does a guideline mean you're liable? Does a law mean you're liable? And I don't know enough about the law you're getting pretty murky waters when you start that, I think.
Well, I also have a question about the 6 feet, too, and that is, if masks work really well, why do we need to be 6 feet apart?
Good question. And it also comes down to, I don't want to get into it, you know, viral load versus, you know, some droplet landing on you, possibly. But there's way more to this, and anybody who says they're looking at the science, God, you can look at the science all you want, do we really want our court system, which has got to be so jammed up now with courts being closed? I mean, how do you even, has there been a jury trial for a criminal in 9 months? I mean, you can't do those.
Yeah, good question. Don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I should.
But I know if you're arrested, there's bond court and all that stuff that's going on. But I don't know if there's actual trials going on. Can you get? Somebody told me they got a thing in the mail that they wanted to be. They were going to be selected to a virtual Zoom jury. Well, that has to be. That can't be criminal. It has to be civil, right?
I hope so.
I mean, I don't think anybody's been
charged with a crime. I don't think I'd want a virtual jury. I'd want them there. I want them there to see my charm, my smiling face.
Oh god! It's just what I was saying.
I tried to talk my way out.
You tried to talk your way out.
It wasn't my fault.
Here's
your John Belushi bumper for the.
Some of the stuff, though, you just have to, just talk about. Thanks for the flash, Gordon, as they used to say on the floor. Now the Chicago police are complaining that all the cameras and stuff are useless with people wearing masks. I have one word to say. Duh. You didn't think of that? I mean, this guy, do you see the video of these three people gunned down this fire lieutenant, the retired fire lieutenant down on the south side, allegedly in a carjacking?
I just saw the headline.
Well, the three guys pull out, and they're all firing at the guy because he won't give up. It looked more targeted at to me, but I'm not a criminologist. But, good guy, retired, four grandkids, goes out to the store and he gets blasted. Well, they can't tell who these people are, although they claim to have gotten a license number. But you can't tell who the people are, the masks on. I mean, it's just pretty scary, Kevin. I mean, there was a carjacking right near us, Manny, the other night. What was it, 1900 Lincoln or something?
I didn't hear that.
Yeah. I mean,
it's right by where Stanley's was.
Yeah. There's nothing but, I mean, there's... The amount of carjackings is up 2 to 3 times from last year, and a lot of that has to do, I think, with people wearing masks and can't be identified. Plus, if you don't think a lot of this stuff with the COVID and things like that is Lori and Jay don't seem to now. Gap is piling out of their flagship store on Michigan Avenue. Who the hell are you going to rent that to, Kevin?
Oh, let me see. I'd love to come up with some good quip for that, but yeah, nothing came to mind quickly enough.
So. Well, Apple picked up the one big place, right, a while back. So, I mean, it's not like there's nobody around, but, I mean, these places, half of them are still boarded up. I mean, if anybody hasn't come to downtown Chicago, I can't imagine what downtown, well, New York is almost all downtown, what New York looks like. I mean,
Ghost Town.
Yeah.
A total ghost town.
And it's interesting when you, that's why it's hard to, you gotta be careful when you draw judgments. Like, I will freely admit that my judgment on this whole situation is probably skewed because of Chicago. I see places.
Well, you know what? You have an experience that most people don't, and that's that you get downtown every day.
Yeah.
And so you're really seeing firsthand the carnage here. And I don't think a lot of people really understand exactly what that looks like.
Well, but I also don't know what I can't do is I can put together for people, you know, the Fed has poured in more money in the last 9 months than the two Fed chairmen before did in 9 years. So you've got that piling in that's increasing stock prices, increasing some asset prices, and it's generally around where some people can get money for free and other people can't. So you've got that going on where you're pouring in. That to me is why the DoorDashes are priced at, you know, whatever, 8-10 times revenue or something, which is, those are 2000 levels. Now there are companies that are priced, I think, somewhat fairly. The ones that you know exactly what they're doing. But by and large, you pump up your asset prices. And on the other end of the tub, from the faucet, you've got the drain. And the drain is, you know, the dramatic amount of rents not being paid, taxes not being paid, mortgages maybe not being paid, and the federal government saying you can't foreclose on people, you can't throw people out. Okay, but somewhere, someplace, those checks land somewhere and the buck stops here. Now, my question is, I have no idea, I wish I did, either the time or the magnitude of what the difference in water flow is. How much is coming in the top? I know in terms of money, the Fed's throwing $1 trillion in for 2 or 3 weeks or a month or two can handle the amount going out the other end in terms of cash. But someplace the Fed's got to stop. And it also strikes me that they have to constantly, to get the market to get to a new level, we're not talking about a couple of billion or a couple hundred billion now, we're talking like a trillion. So they seem to have to be doing more and more to get to the same place, which is troubling. But I don't think people, I've been trying to study it, I have no idea what the magnitude of the holdup and the backup of stuff going to go down the drain here. I mean, how many of these buildings are out? I mean, are we going to basically bleep can, you know, whole train lines because nobody's on them? Because nobody has to get downtown anymore? I mean, even those who haven't been in New York, pretty much all subway lines lead to Manhattan. That's where people worked. Now, are we just going to say they're just around for people to go shopping? I don't know that you can put that system together. And if you lose the subways in New York, what do you lose? You lose the whole place. If you lose the trains in Chicago, what are you in Chicago for? I mean, these are very, very troubling type of things, Kevin, and nobody's even talking about. So I think you need to get some of these places back going.
Yeah, you must. And I don't know what's going to happen. Meanwhile, you got people like Fauci out there saying, actually, these vaccines are really just going to prevent you from getting symptoms. They're not really going to keep you from being able to spread the virus. In other words, it's a therapeutic. We have those.
Well, actually,
but what it really is that's the excuse for keeping everything locked up, keeping everybody in masks, all of that kind of stuff.
And then, Kevin,
you know, that's infuriating on its own level.
We've only got a minute and a half here, too. But my concern there is, and this is, I don't know, this always bothers a little bleep out of me. But 2-3 weeks ago, I got through my coronavirus, whoever stuck me into this network, I got this big long study on how the AstraZeneca thing was tested down in Brazil and. Was it Brazil and Italy? I don't know, but I just remember about the Brazil one. Now, Fauci's actually correct. But the guy actually, but he can't ever tell a straight story, which makes me wonder, what is he doing? The story is, for those that, is when they give out with these tests, they got let's see, Pfizer was 44,000, somebody else was 36. Anyway, this one was like 25,000 people. So you get 12 and a half that you give the placebo to, and you have 12 and a half that you give the vaccine to. Now, this is the one where they screwed up and gave only half the people getting the vaccine, only got half the vaccine the first time through, so there ended up being four groups, not two. Anyway, I don't think that makes that much difference. But the bottom line is, if they give, say you and Maddie go in there, and one of you gets the placebo, one gets the vaccines, even the person given the shots doesn't even know what which ones you're getting. Matter of fact, they added another shot to it so that you would get a little bit of irritation, which is even more bizarre. Because if you just give somebody a saline shot, and the other one, you know, it's like a penicillin shot in your butt when you're 5 years old, you had some aggravation, so you knew you got the penicillin. So that what they even are trying to do is do something to irritate you where you got the shot, so you can't just say, well, I had no problem, you did, you must have got it, I didn't. So they're even trying to do that to people. But what they're doing is, you then go forth, you know, go forth and prosper, my son. You go out, and if you call back in 10 days later, 2 weeks later, hey, I've got symptoms, they bring you in, Kevin, saying you're the guy with the vaccine, and then they'll say you have gotten the coronavirus. So this 90% number you're seeing is out of the 200 people that call in that say, you know, I've got symptoms, I must have it, and they drag you in, they're saying 190 of those people, 180 of those people did not get the vaccine, they got the placebo, and only 20 or 10. So that's where the 90% efficacy is. So, but what they're
understood. But it's a stat model, not a genuine.
Okay, but this is the punchline. Russell's waiting for a second. The punchline is they're not following the sides out there. They're giving you a test every week, so they don't know if the people who got the placebo or you may have gotten it. You may have not gotten it because you've got the vaccine, but it could possibly be, I doubt it, it could possibly be that you actually have it and are spreading it and just have a milder case. So we're right back to the same thing now. Well, even though you're 20 years old and it's not going to bother you, you don't have the right to get it because you might give it to somebody else. They're not checking that at all with this. They're just checking for symptoms. So they're trying to figure out if you got it, not that you were able to give it to somebody else. So that's what Fauci's talking about, without exactly explaining it, because of course he wants everybody to go get the vaccine. But if he said what I just said, people say, wait a minute, why aren't you giving everybody a test every week to find out if they're getting it at all? Because that's what you'd really like to know, right?
Well, and we can get into PCR testing on Friday and how that works. And the other thing on Friday is we need to talk about China and the three different news items that have come out this week regarding China and infiltration and how they fit together. So let's do that on Friday. Yep. But we got to pick up on the testing too.
Meanwhile, I might have some chop suey for lunch. You know,
okay.
S&P futures up 4 and NASDAQ futures down 14. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P Futures up 475. NASDAQ Futures down 12. We can't do this shameless plug, can we? For Russell?
Go ahead. What are we shamelessly plugging?
You can plug anything from Russell. Oh, okay. Russell's great.
Well, one of our contributors, in an effort to be independent, went out and paid retail for your book.
Oh, my goodness.
Instead of being comped as a member of the show. And but he says in order to be independent, so he could give his book review, he felt he needed to do that. You can guess who this is. And says it's absolutely spectacular, nothing like it ever he's ever read, and nothing like it on the market.
I severely doubt that all of that is true, but I appreciate it.
Well, are you on the cover in your cardigan spreader and pipe?
I'm on the back looking very pensive.
Russell, just in case you think that Chief is BSing you, the exact quote is, "It is excellent. There's absolutely nothing else like it available."
I like it.
That's an actual quote.
The fun part of the book is like the first two-thirds is, here's what VIX does, here's how you trade it, blah, blah, blah. The back third is basically an overview of every volatility event we've had since the crash of 87.
Cool.
And how things acted going into it, how things acted coming out of it. So, and you know, of course, I lucked out because we had a volatility event at the beginning of the year.
Do you
I was brought up in a household where you were never allowed to say anything nice about yourself. So
I understand
it. Not really good at that part. So, but I think it's a good book.
Well, you sold one now.
I sold one. I'm doing good. So I'll
retail.
Honey, the credit card is another $4.75 closer to being paid off.
Yes. Hey, I have a question for you. Our friend Eric.
I do appreciate that. Thank you.
Our friend Eric, who is also an author. He says that the industry, at some point, how can I ask this question? Do you have a printing, or when somebody wants it, they print it?
They did a printing, and I know that they did a printing. I don't know how many. I know at my previous publisher, every book that I wrote, there was a first printing of 5,000. And the reason that they do that is Amazon wants that so Amazon can get the book in somebody's grubby little hands the next day if they want it.
Okay.
In fact, I don't know what my initial hair, because my guy's in London, so we don't talk as much as I probably should. But I do know that whatever the first warehouse shipment was to Amazon, it actually sold out the first day and they had to back order them.
All right. If there was a big bookstore I could go into downtown, which there aren't anymore.
There's a Barnes & Noble on State at the DePaul campus.
All right, so if I walk in there
There's also one right by our house, Chief.
That's true.
Right on Clybourne.
But I mean, there used to be. But, I mean, within,
yeah, there is one up there too.
For God's sake.
But I mean, when I started where we are now, within 2,000 mm-hmm. yards, there was a Crocs and Montanos. There was one.
Yeah.
Even 10 years ago, there was a ton of bookstores, yeah. And now there's none.
There was a big one in the. Well, not to mention, if you walked into the tobacco store. If you walked into the regular old store that sold everything in 175, there would be a wall of books in all the books.
Yeah, it was like really cool, and it was our industry books.
Yeah, and there would be a big thing, finance, and anybody in the area, because there were always people in the Board of Trade or the CBOE that were writing books, there'd be the latest 30 of them would be right there. So you would, so Russell's book, the question is, are you out in front at any place like that?
Not that I've seen. I actually wrote a dummies book like 11 years ago. And that one I always see that one if I happen to be at a Barnes & Noble. But the other ones, I think they're so niched, the ones on VIX and those sorts of things, they never really make it to the actual physical bookstore.
Ah, okay. Because the reason why I ask is because I'm sort of fat. I have, well, there's three people that I know now that are in the book writing business. There's you, there's Eric, and then Thomas, our producer from days gone by. He illustrates children's books.
Oh, cool!
Yeah, Thomas is a very very talented artist, and there is.
I actually just commissioned him for a painting.
Yeah, he's real good.
He's very good.
Oh,
and I believe his books. If you order one, they print it and send it to you.
Yeah. I did use Amazon for one book, a small book that I wrote myself, and I know that's how that works for the Amazon book.
Well, Eric claims that he believes there will come a day where if you go into a larger bookstore, like you guys are talking about, that if you mm-hmm. order a book, they're going to have the equipment in the back room. They're just going to spit it out for you.
I could see that. I could totally see that.
Instead of having 90 bazillion of them all over the place, and this place they're selling, this place mm-hmm. they're not, that type of thing. Anyway.
But no, that's, if you use the Amazon CreateSpace, I think is the name of their publisher, that's how that works. So, and one of the cool things is if you want to be able to claim that you've written a book, you can write the most awful thing in the world and put it up for sale on Amazon. And Amazon's cool with it because they don't publish any until they don't print them out until somebody buys one.
Ah, okay. Well, I have a question for you.
If you ever meet an author, somebody that says, "Yeah, I'm an author," and there's another author around, the first thing they say is, "Oh, who's your publisher?" To figure out if you're a real author or not.
Ah.
there's author snob.
When you were going through your research and these, I'll use the term VIX events. Did you try and tie in market movements and recovery to Fed action, any of them or not?
I didn't really throw Fed action in there that much, just because if I had, it would end up being a whole book in its own right.
Yeah.
I really just talked about what the news catalyst was. How was the market acting? How was the volatility market, and how was the equity market acting going into it? And then how long did it take for VIX to come back down and the stock market to recover? And what was the nature of the event that allowed it to recover very quickly or linger on as far as recovery goes? And then finally talked about how, sometimes volatility remains high even though the stock market recovers very quickly. The similarities between VIX and the S&P 500 this time and after the financial crisis are ridiculously similar, regardless of how different the news is.
I wonder.
So I tried to say ignore the news and pay attention to the price action, because that's really telling you what's going on.
I'm going to take a stab at this, and then you tell me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that I'll give two quick stories. Hopefully, they're quick. One was the long-term capital situation, which mm-hmm. was 98. I'm sure you had that in there. And, we were doing a Protected Index program, and we ended up doing fine for people. But I was on the board of the SIBO, and I was chairman of the marketing committee. Not that that's a big deal or anything. but they hauled me out to the old Yankee Stadium to see a World Series game. Into an alleged skybox, right?
Yeah.
Except they didn't have skybox at old Yankee Stadium. The box was actually behind what you would consider the grandstand. So you essentially watched TV and drank and ate, which was
you're in the room and watched the game on TV.
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you could look out and see something, but you were like a long way away.
Yeah,
and
you could hear the cheering before it happened on TV.
Right. Well, a week before was the long-term capital situation, something I had never seen happen. This is back when you had expirations only monthly, and the OEX at the time, which was the premier product in all of finance. And the OEX pit did more contracts. It was the second biggest exchange in the world, that pit. Did more contracts than the rest of the CBOE, did more contracts than the Amex. Did more contracts than anybody but the New York Stock Exchange. Anyway, the Fed came out with the long-term capital markets going down, and essentially lowered the discount rate or the federal funds rate at 10 o'clock on a Friday morning of expiration.
Yeah.
Which sort of buried a lot of people. I lucked out. I was real short, but I had enough calls just thinking that somebody might pull something like that to where my position lost like a whole bunch of money, but the calls made back like everything but like $20 or something. It was so ridiculous, Russell. Anyway.
Never been so happy to be break even.
Oh, God, yeah. Plus the end of the day, I did real well in the close, but I ended up having a decent day, but a few people were carried out. I mean, it was a massive turn.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially the Fed, then fast forward to my World Series thing the next week, and one of the guys knew I traded in the OEX. And he goes, I talked to one of my Fed buddies, want to know how bad people got hurt when we did that last Friday. What do you mean, we? Who's we? You got a mouse in your pocket?
Yeah, hold on a second.
Yeah.
Well, how could I become we?
Well, essentially, they refloated. I don't think they cared about long-term capital necessarily, but the people who were stuck in there and weren't going to get paid, you know, I'll use the usual term, Goldman Morgan, but I have no idea if those...
Those firms were the counterparty on those things.
Well, okay.
I didn't know enough to
name the counterparty. They essentially gave these guys a heads up and said, we're going to do this morning, make some of your money back, and then we're just going forward. So they basically... And whenever you do that to the upside, you're not going to get any bitch from every man, because anytime the market goes up, I mean, if the Fed poured money in and caused the market to rally every day, that's the only good thing my representative's ever done for me, right? But there's no respect of having a market that's properly priced, because someday you're going to pay for it. You know, nobody thinks that way. But anyway, that particular, I knew people that really got buried. So that particular instance, 2 weeks later, if you ask people about the long-term capital, they're like, what's that? You know, the thing was totally off the playing field. But now this, today, like 2008, I think, Russell, has to do with the reason why the VIX is not, it's gone down some, quite a bit, but not like to zero. I think it's because the whole mess is seen more of a failure of government leadership, blah, 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 and it's not over. I mean, now we're talking midterm elections. Now we're talking, is Trump going to run it? There's no end to this thing. I mean, Obama got in, and all of a sudden, were they going to bury him in the midterm elections, which they sort of did. I mean, it was never, all of a sudden now the VIX just hung in there going out. There's never a time now where you could say, and I'm asking you, not telling you. I mean, I'm saying to me, there's never a time now where you or anybody can say, wow, we're 2020. You know what? By 2023, everything's cool, and you'll see if there were long-term options in 2023 going out that far, which there aren't, the VIX and the implied volatility in the OEX would be 12. You know, I mean, it's just not happening. It's just not happening. And
It's not. It's absolutely, actually, there are other derivative markets that give you an idea of what people are thinking out to 2023. There's actually futures based on what people think S&P 500 dividends are going to be, and those actually show a dip between 2022 and 2023 right now.
They're
going to have a run up recovery and then possibly dip again. But there's nothing forecasting out any kind of certainty whatsoever beyond about 2.5-3 months right now.
Well, if you're, you know, I'm starting
to hear, there's tons of uncertainty left in the world.
Well, I'm starting to hear, you know, people talk, which, you know, getting talk is you know what, that and 20 cents get you a phone call or a quarter. No, there's no phones anymore, but so that you have to put that one back in the phrases nobody knows anything about. I think that some people are starting to talk now that if the Fed continues doing what they're doing, we're starting to hear the word inflation all over the place. And people are seeing it in the metals. And so I think what people are thinking, if they extend it out, no matter what year you put on it, if we come to 2022 or 2021 late, and we start to see this bubble of inflation, you're going to see the Fed stop doing what they're doing, which is pouring money in. Now, whether they just get to stop or whether they actually got to drag money out, you can sit there on CNBC, you can be Cramer, you can be Solomon, I don't care. If you think for a second that the stock market is going to continue to go up, if all of a sudden if the Fed calls Morgan Stanley or Goldman Sachs in the morning, instead of saying, we want to buy bonds, we want to sell some bonds, I got a bridge for you, because it won't happen. I mean, if all of a sudden, you saw what happened in late 2018 when they paused for a second and pouring more money into the system and started to drag just a little out. And if these guys say at the end of next year the Fed balance sheet's going to be $5 trillion instead of $7 trillion, what do you think the market's down tomorrow or today? 10%.
Oh, easily. Yeah, I was going to say double digit percentage easily.
So,
but they're not going to say that. They know better than saying that.
Say, hey, humorous.
I told you what I actually think they should do with those things. I think they should start to do that and not say they're doing it. Why do they have to tell us what trade they're doing when nobody else does?
Well, if the Fed balance sheet instead of $7.2 trillion,
and you can see it.
Yeah.
But if you see it retrospectively, and it's like the stock market kind of languishes around for 3 months, and then you see that, you know, the Fed was pulling back some of the liquidity and trying to get the balance sheet a little bit more in order, and it didn't crush the equity market. Maybe they actually would have the ability to continue along that path, and people wouldn't worry too much about it. But if they say we're planning on doing this, everybody's going to try to get in front of it. When everybody tries to get in front of it, they can't do it.
I think, Russell, and you know better than me, so tell me I'm too conspiratorial. I think these guys are attached at the hip to an extent that we can't even my conspiratorial mind can't even imagine. That every single morning, for lack of a better term, because I'm sure they communicate differently, that the phone call goes out from the New York Fed and says, we want to buy X today. And the guy who gets the call, be it Citigroup or Goldman or whatever turn it is, gets to go out and buy some stuff, turn around and sell it to the Fed. He's going to get commission on both sides. And, oh, by the way, he's going to get a premium because he front-ran the damn order. I mean, that's my – and I think that if all of a sudden it's Wednesday of next week and that call didn't come through, everybody knows it.
Did you get the call? I didn't get the call.
Well, I'm saying everybody but us.
Kind of like the old LIBOR situation that we talked about last week, where it was a bunch of people calling around.
Yeah.
What could go wrong with that one?
And I think I have news that if Citigroup all goes out and says, we're not accumulating bonds to sell to the Fed, we need to, does anybody have any for, anybody want to, buy some? I think that reverberates, you know, through the market like a fart in church. I mean, everybody knows it a minute later.
Oh my goodness!
I mean, am I right? I mean, I don't think you keep information like that. It's not you and I looking a week later at the Federal Reserve balance sheet, seeing they're down $200 billion. Said they must have done something last week. I think everybody already knows from the first call.
Yeah, well, it doesn't creep out there as quickly as it does with a headline on CNBC or Bloomberg or whatever.
All right.
And so you mentioned inflation. This is that, you know. I like being on Wednesdays because we get an inflation number at 7:30 our time. It's CPI or PPI today, and I would brace for this one a little bit.
Hey, but
We'll see what happens in 7 minutes. But
well, you've got while we've got some time before that number, because I'll dig up what the expectations are. What how did you go about? Where was your biggest information source for all this stuff? In other words, how did you analyze long-term capital or United Airlines thing. I mean, what? Take the United Airlines fiasco of 89. Uh-huh. How and where did you get the info, and what were you digging for? What was interesting to you to put in the book?
Really, what I did was I tried not to cookie cutter each story, each volatility event. That's how I refer to them. Just because, so many people get hurt when the market dips down very quickly, I like to put at least a positive spin on it. So it's a volatility event. But, basically what I did was I did a quant screen where I took a look at, how often VIX had run up, maybe 50% in a 6-month period or something along those lines. And then I would look at what the news headlines were in the journal, a few weeks leading up to in the middle of the event, a few weeks leading out of it. But a lot of it is, the easiest one to describe and the one that's in everybody's memory is remember that big volatility spike that we got in February of 2018, in early February of 2018. Basically, VIX was going up every day in January, even though the S&P 500 was going up as well.
Right.
Yeah, and it's like, it's one of those Monday morning quarterback things where, at the time, I was still at SIBO and we were getting calls, is something wrong with VIX? Why is it behaving like this from reporters? And, my statement in the book is, if you start to see both of them trend in the same direction like this, it could be a precursor to, bad things within the equity market. And then, talked about what the fundamentals were behind it. But I tried to, really the idea is, almost using VIX as an indicator to get an idea of when these things are coming and trying to find the commonality in the price action.
Well, so you didn't wait for the event to happen and then the VIX. You charted it weeks before.
Oh, I thought, I look at before, during, and after.
Okay.
How long did it take for VIX to revert to lower levels and those sorts of things? Because, and inevitably it is a book on how to make money trade VIX.
Well, did you do anything like we talked about, a few minutes ago, the phenomenon that now it's not just the VIX, it's the fact that the volatility doesn't drop going out, which somehow
right.
or another sometimes gets picked up in the VIX, sometimes doesn't. And I'm going to say back in like the United Airlines or long-term capital, you saw the short-term implied volatility for like the month or two out being pretty high, and then it dropped precipitously afterward. And that
right.
we're sort of not seeing now. Did you pick up any of that?
We're not seeing it right now, and I did. I took a look at, because, the VIX futures are based on, will give you an idea of where
right.
the market thinks VIX is going, 3-6 months in the future, because there's a lot of anticipatory price influence on that. And typically when the market has no clue, the VIX futures will be at a little bit of a premium, but will be like just the curve will be extremely flat, almost like you have people playing both sides of it because nobody has, there's no real market consensus. And that's where we are right now going into early next year.
In fact,
when we go to break, I'll pull up a chart and I'll tweet it out. That shows exactly what I'm talking about right now.
Well, we have a,
but then there's also a 3-month, a 6-month, and a 1-year VIX, and those indexes give you an idea of what people are thinking farther out as well.
How accurate? And I know you're a VIX dude. By the way, you're not much of a calendar dude. The CPI is tomorrow.
Then PPI is today.
Today is job openings and wholesale inventories.
What? I thought we usually got one of the, never mind. I always felt like there's always, maybe we just talk about inflation so darn much that I thought that.
Yes, very much. Hey, we have a question from one of our listeners that just texted me. Ax Russell, where he sees major VIX support.
It's 20 right now.
You think it's, I guess I have a
We don't talk about VIX nearly as much as we should on this program. All I do is pay attention to VIX. I mean, my whole career has been kind of based on following the VIX. So I can answer questions like that, no problem.
Right, well,
it's 20. It gets very close. It's gotten very close 20 two or three times. And I think that because there's so much uncertainty going into 2021 right now, you know, market watchers that don't necessarily trade VIX, but maybe trade S&P 500 options, think that when we get close to 20, that's about as low as implied volatility is going to get in this environment. And they're using it as an opportunity to get some portfolio protection. Because regardless of what's going on in the S&P 500, VIX just doesn't seem to want to get under 20 right now.
No, it doesn't.
Just
as an old school guy versus a new school guy, I know we're going to break here, just one question. Do you get appreciably different knowledge or feelers or a feel from looking out at the VIX futures than I do just looking at the spider or the SPX volatility and running it out 2 years and just seeing where the implied's going? I assume it's the same story, but is it?
Sometimes there is a disconnect between the two.
Why?
And there's actually a little bit of a disconnect right now where going farther out, S&P 500 at the money implied volatility seems to be trending upward, whereas the anticipation in VIX is not as much to the, I hate to use bullish, but not looking as much to the upside as SPX at the money implied volatility. And then one of the great things about SPX at the money, or SPX implied volatility, is there's so many freaking expirations, you can tell where there's some event risk in the overall market.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Like last I checked, you know, we get the Electoral College next Monday. And check that, because apparently I'm bad on calendar stuff today. But we get the Electoral College next Monday, and the implied volatility of those Monday expiring options really isn't showing a whole lot of concern, at least last I checked.
Well, that's because you're part of 0.1% of the population that knows that.
Yeah.
SP Futures up 5, and SP Futures down 11. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatory laboratories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello, and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Hayes, Mr. Weber, Mr. Russell Rhodes with us. S&P futures up 6, Nasdaq futures down 11. Dow up 82, notable stocks in the Dow, notable, blowing up $2. We talked to Russell about the stories with those guys. Home Depot up 99 cents. A lot of these Home Depots of the world took a big hit earlier in the week, but they're creeping back here a little bit as we always do. Buy the dip, buy the dip. It's a style these days. DAX up 126. That's almost a full 1%. FTSE up 21.3%. Kicker up 17.3%. We're in Asia. The Nikkei up 350. That's 1.3%. It's been pretty wild, Nikkei. Pretty much to the upside, but it has some down days too as well lately. So up and down. Shanghai down 38. That's 1.1%. Hang Seng up 198.7%. As a review of yesterday, the industrial average is up 104. S&P's up 10. NASDAQ up 62. Bonds, 0.95%. A percent in the 10-year, that's up almost 4 basis points. Making our move toward 1%. Bund can't go anywhere, minus 0.59. Same way with Japan, positive 0.01. Oil up 26 cents, 45.86. Brent up 31 cents, 49.15, pushing toward 50. Natural gas up a dime, 250. This thing was up to 3, so it had almost a craterous drop. The weather has been pretty mild across the country. But who knows, that might be going to change here. RBOB up a penny. Last but not least, gold down $10, 1864. Has had a really good week. Silver up, down 22 cents. Copper up a penny. Eddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports, all kinds of sports.
36 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. Expressways are looking okay, although we are seeing a slowdown on the inbound Kennedy. No accident to report, but a decent volume of traffic compared to what we've seen earlier in the week where there's been basically no traffic. So some red on the inbound Kennedy, but no accident to report. Edens looks fine. Same for Lakeshore Drive in both directions. Eisenhower and Stevenson have been quiet all morning. Same for the Ryan, I-57, and the Bishop Ford. Off the expressways, a couple of issues on the south side. 47th Street between Western and Damon is closed due to a fatal crash that happened overnight. Apparently, a driver hit a tree, and an investigation is underway. Now that has 47th Street closed.
Sounds like the tree won.
Yes. Just southeast of there, 58th Street between Palina and Ashland, there was a fire apparently at a tire shop that has crews on the scene, and that's affecting West 58th Street, again, between Palina and Ashland. So a couple of issues near each other there on the south side. Everything else is looking good out there. Weather today, it's going to be a very pleasant day for December. Partly cloudy skies, lots of sunshine, a high of 49. Could touch the low 50s tomorrow. Right now it is clear and 36 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy with a high of 79 today. Right now it's clear and 53. In sports, as Chief mentioned, it was a busy night last night, and day for that matter. Tuesday night football, it was the Ravens beating the Cowboys 34-17 to wrap up week 12. Cowboys pretty much eliminated now from playoff contention in the NFC East. Ravens right in the thick of it in the AFC. White Sox were busy. They signed Adam Eaton, who returns to the ball club. He, of course, played for the Sox a couple of years ago, to a one-year, $7 million deal. Sox also have a club option for a second year at $8.5 million if they want to go that route. They also made a big trade to acquire a veteran pitcher Lance Lynn from the Texas Rangers in exchange for Dane Dunning and a prospect. Lynn has 1 year on his deal that the White Sox will pick up for $9.3 million. Lastly, ACC Big Ten Challenge in college hoops last night got underway, and the Big Ten absolutely dominated the ACC, going 6-1. Illini were big winners. They won at Duke 83-68. Notre Dame was one of the losing ACC teams, falling at home to Ohio State 90-85. Purdue was the only Big Ten team to lose. They blew a 20-point lead in the second half at Miami. Iowa, Penn State, Rutgers, and Minnesota also won for the Big Ten. The second round of games is today and tonight, with one exception, as Virginia had to cancel their game with Michigan State due to a COVID surge in their organization, apparently. So that game will be hopefully rescheduled. So it'll be a 13-game ACC Big Ten challenge, and the Big Ten will just need to win one more game to win the challenge again. Chief.
I could see you having to find yourself an attorney here. Let's talk about side effects with the COVID shot. One Pfizer trial participant told the CNBC that after a second shot, he woke up with chills, shaking so hard he cracked a tooth.
Yikes.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Wow. Oh, my goodness.
You see what they're doing?
So I shouldn't take the shot so I can go back to teaching the youngsters at Loyola starting in January?
Sounds to me like this guy had more trouble than me having the COVID.
Yeah, and I also heard erectile dysfunction.
That would not be good.
That I should expect that.
Well, good news
is... I'll let you know.
The good news is Viagra's off, is in generic, so you're good to go on that. Just saying. Well, you know what? I think what they're doing in... I sort of answered my own dumb question when I was reading about the AstraZeneca, putting something in the shot other than your basic saline, right? The placebo. And evidently, the reason you do that is so you have some irritation with the guys getting that thing, or else they know they didn't get the real shot. I would never have thought of that. I'm so brain dead sometimes.
Just to trick people to think that there's something going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually was at my doctor recently, and he talked me into getting the pneumonia shot. So I said, okay. Girl comes in, gives you the shot. I never felt anything like it, I mean, in terms of shots. I never even felt it. The needle must be so small in this stuff. And then she says, well, I'm supposed to put a Band-Aid on it, but I can't even find out where I stuck it. I said, well, don't worry about it. I mean, so they talk about the difference. This is BW before Webby, when you'd go into the doctor's office and the guy actually had a steamer, like a where you actually would steam the needles and they'd reuse them for like penicillin. Those things were so big, it felt like you're getting jabbed with a spear compared to the new stuff. But anyway, they're having some issues. And one of their biggest concern is if somebody has a reaction on the first shot, you're supposed to go back the 2 weeks later and get another one, people aren't going to go. But they're claiming that some of the reactions are the same as the COVID, which is, I don't know.
I'm not going to pretend to know an awful lot about all that. I mean, my wife used to be a drug research nurse, so I do know how the process works and everything.
In a laboratory or in the hood?
I also know what's happened to me, that I've never really been a big flu shot person. I've only taken it like 3 or 4 times. And I've always felt lousy for a day or so afterwards. And my assumption is that if you get the COVID shot, if you're building up immunity to it or whatever, they're giving you a mild case of it.
There's supposed to be a difference. The breakthrough here, again, this is from my, whoever got me involved in the COVID site, or read all the studies on this stuff, most of which I can't understand at all. There's all these different graphs and all these chemical names on it. The difference, the genius of this, shall we say, scientific breakthrough in the COVID. Normally, again, this is I'm walking the layman's terms here. Mm-hmm. If you get a vaccine, usually, slippery word, there's some either a damn near dead or dead part of the virus in there that your body recognizes is still the virus. You start developing antibodies, even though the thing allegedly can't hurt you. Okay, but you are getting the whole virus. But now the genius or the breakthrough here is they're not giving you the whole virus. They're giving you that, remember the story about this ugly looking thing. Everybody can see it. It's got all these like stickers on it, like little sticky things sticking out of the cell.
If it were a sports team, it would be the coronavirus's mascot.
Yeah, yeah. And so, as a matter of fact, they think that that's one day the people from Europe think that that's what's causing a lot of this stuff worldwide right now, is that there was a mutation where one of the sticky things, one of the proteins, actually got bigger, which makes it easier to attach to a cell, and it made the thing more contagious than it was before, but also less deadly, which is essentially what we're seeing worldwide. We're seeing a bazillion cases, so the percentage of people dying is dramatically less than it was in April or May.
You're talking about the
virus itself.
I've heard that they think that happened in Italy.
Yes.
And because that happened in Italy, now China says that this thing actually started in Italy.
If we get it now here, we're probably getting the European after mutation version, because that one seems to multiply better. Anyway,
originally they've been tracing it. Originally, we were getting the one from Asia.
Yeah, on the West Coast for sure.
And the version of it shifted
right
to the European version over time.
Well, the East Coast got it originally from Europe.
So right. It came from both directions, and we're kind of in the middle.
Yeah, we got it both places.
And apparently, the initial trace can go back to a couple of people that were from China that came back.
Right.
And rumor is they were riding the red line down to Chinatown every day, and that's how it got out.
Well, anyway,
everything bad I've ever caught has been on the red line.
Well, the genius of this particular vaccine is that it doesn't use the whole RNA sequence. It uses just one of the proteins from one of those sticky things that attaches to your cell. So, so your body is supposed to recognize that protein, which is very powerful, and it gets, and it picks up antibodies towards that protein, which again gives it antibodies toward the whole cell. That's the breakthrough here. So the idea that by any stretch of logic, you can't get the disease from the vaccine because the disease isn't in there. It's one protein out of a bazillion. So there's no way they're giving your body a dead version of this thing that turns out to not be dead, which is your greatest fear when there's a vaccine. So the thing, for lack of a better term, ought to be safe. I mean, I read some of the theory on it. It sounds to me like it ought to be safe. But, you know, then again, I'm doing stocks and jacks.
And I know what you mean.
But I'm not. It's not the same as of giving you the entire polio virus and hoping it's DED dead, right?
Yeah.
So it shouldn't have. So I'm kind of surprised from all that stuff that I read that it's causing people that much of a problem getting the shot. But then again, everybody, there isn't a soul alive that doesn't have some reaction to some shot or medicine, no matter what it is. I mean, there's people who have reaction to aspirin, I'm sure. I'm shifting gears constantly back to your book, Russell, because I'm fascinated about the history piece of that. I almost wonder if I had 6 months one day, because I wouldn't want to be messing with your book, to take all the sequences in there and actually follow the political events and the Fed stuff at the time. I wonder what you'd end up with.
I wonder if some of the especially with the big volatility moves where we get some spike, you generally don't get quick moves to the downside. It's usually quick moves to the upside and a grind lower. But every once in a while you get a big push to the downside in VIX, and I would almost guarantee that those are that those are influenced by the Fed. How's that for neutral tone on what you were just saying?
Well, you're talking about, I mean, I think if I had the time, somebody's probably already done it somewhere at some university, if you went back even to the 60s, probably even further than that, and looked at Fed money movements, and let's say if you think they're supposed to be growing the money supply at 3% a year or 3.5%, whatever the Milton Friedmans of the old world used to think, that if you were appreciably over that or appreciably under that for any period of time, it should show up in the market going up or down. And I honestly believe that it does. I mean, I think that everything that's happened in the market in my lifetime, certainly my investing lifetime, if you plopped a Fed action chart on top of the market and gave it about a 3 or 4 month lead time, essentially you're trading the market. Now, every time you cause movement, you don't necessarily cause panic or exuberation. That's the connection I'd love to see. I mean, I think I'm right in terms of the direction, but just because we start going up or start going down doesn't mean there's a VIX panic. It's more a long-term capital, United, some other kind of, it could be caused by something totally differently, politics or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd love to make that, to find out where that is. I mean, you probably could, off the top of your head, could name a few you thought were that way.
Yeah, I'd have to, not off the top of my head, but I could dig around and probably find some of those instances. I didn't get that granular on what was, what was pushing VIX around and what made it either drop very, very quickly, which seems to happen more and more so, especially because the Fed seems to be more and more interventionist. Just the reversion back to the downside.
Well, I would say like the 89 fiasco, United Airlines deal fell apart. Mm-hmm. I'm going to say that was probably, out of all the messes, the Fed probably had very little to do with that, and mm-hmm. the carnage that took place in the market for the next couple of days, and I'm sure there was a VIX spike someplace, at least for a day or two, because I was in the OEX when it happened. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that had anything to do with the Fed. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure. Maybe they were the one who ran some money into the thing after the crash, and by 89, that's why United Airlines was $300 when it was worth way less than that. I mean, it could be that there's that that's exactly what I'm talking about. I just don't remember it happening. Because obviously after the crash, they poured money into the system like there was no tomorrow. So it wouldn't surprise me that 2 years later that, you know, a lot of the comeback in the market wasn't the Fed, and people started buying other companies. And were you around when that happened in 89?
No, I was still finishing up. I think I was in my fourth year of undergrad, so I was a sophomore.
Only a sophomore. 7 years down the drain, Belushi.
I know. No, that was totally me, man. God, 8 years of college down the drain.
He goes, lots of people go to college for 7 years. Yeah, they're called doctors.
Yeah.
We talk about, if you trade options, it was an absolute lesson in option trading, Russell. That week when these guys, I forget, it was some hedge fund, was going to pay $300 for United Airlines stock. And it just looked high. And every day, because obviously it was in the news here like no tomorrow, because United's a Chicago company. And every day, some long-term holder of United Airlines in the Chicago area, some hedge fund that you'd only heard the name that's been around since Hector was a pup kind of thing. They would say on a Tuesday, we don't believe this $300 number, like we're out at 285 or something. If ever there was a deal that you knew in your heart of hearts was going to blow up, it was that deal.
It was that, because it just wasn't acting. It was not acting the way that it was supposed to.
But on Friday morning, when the deal was supposed to be Friday night, expiration, I think the thing was up to like 294 or something. And I'm going to say the 90 puts that afternoon were $35. the idea that you thought it was going to fall apart and actually saying, let me get this straight, I'm paying whatever it was, $25, $30, $35 for a put that expires in 4 hours. Talk about play to play. It's like saying
That's kind of the idea that I behind the book was what are the derivative traders? Who are the smarter traders? What are they telling you about what's getting ready to happen in the underlying market?
Well, yeah, I mean, you had a
what you're describing is hard to pick up on in an individual stock unless you are really, unless you really know that market well, like you knew you know, the things that you were involved in back then very, very well.
But we had a trader. We had a trader in the crowd.
Vix gives you a way to, you know, keep up with what the attitude is about the overall market. And then the futures can help you pinpoint where people are concerned about different things. The election, you know, the election in 2016, I go through that and I talk about how the implied volatility acted and how it acted overnight as well. It started to go down once it became certainty that Trump was going to win. It actually started to tick down before the S&P 500 futures started to go back up.
Well, the
and you can see that over very short time frames, and you can see that over very long time frames.
I either was a dummy and didn't pick it up in 2016, or the statistics out of the Fed didn't allow me to pick it up. But I don't know if we were. I don't know if I mentioned to you last week that I went through the Fed H6 release, and for some reason the Fed does a money supply growth, and they give you the number every week, and then they give you the end of the month, which is, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know why they do that, but they do. It just so happens, Russell, at this particular time, the end of the month, the 31st was a Friday. The election was, what, on the 4th or whatever that Tuesday was. So
yeah.
there was a number for Friday, and then the week that they used, the week ended on the Monday.
Mm-hmm.
So I was able to compare the Friday number to the Monday number, which you very rarely can do on a day that you actually care about, right? And
yeah.
I think I found out of the number for you exactly next week. Maybe I can try and dig it up now. The Fed put something like, I'm going to dig it up because only you would know the, because they put something like $400 billion into the market that Monday, the day before the election. Now,
yeah.
Now, and of course, you know, well, let's say Biden won. that the, now my question is in 2016, now you just said, you gave the, I'm going to say the party CNBC line
mm-hmm.
that yes, when Trump started to win, that the market went way up. Now my question is that going to be independent of when the Fed saw it down? Did they do the same thing in 2016? Because this phenomenon in this particular year has nothing to do with winning the election. It has to do with that kind of money in one day. Now, here I've
yeah.
got I've got a not seasonally adjusted M1 and for October 2020. M1, I never even look at M1, but just look at it in this one day. It's $5.571 trillion. Okay, but if you look at the week ending November 2nd, it's like unadjusted was $5.472. That's $400 billion.
Mm-hmm. I honestly would not be. It would be really nice if they would share some commentary around those numbers, wouldn't it?
Yeah,
kind of like they do around the. My guess is there were lots of concerns about civil unrest, so they wanted to make sure that, you know, if we really had a bad situation, that there was enough cash out there for people to get out of ATMs and whatnot over that time period to keep the economy running.
Could be. No,
I really do. I don't think their intent was to you know, influence the election one way or another. I think their intent was to make sure things kept running smoothly, because, you know, as much civil unrest as we had seen over the summer, regardless of, you know, whether it was somebody getting convicted for being a bad cop or somebody acting like a bad cop, you know, either way, we were getting a riot. So, you know, we didn't have any idea what was going to happen the night of the election or the next morning. But, you know, we could have, if you had to guess, that there was going to be some bad stuff going on and, you know, the Best Buy was going to get torn up again, you probably would have guessed there was a good chance that was going to happen.
Well, I just,
yeah.
when you talk about what is the Fed's role, what's the government's
yeah.
role? I mean, actually, I give the wrong number. It's 5874 on M1 and the second, 5572 on that Friday. So in terms of M1, it's $350 billion. Now, I when you start talking about money supply growth, credit, all those kinds of things, I'm not so sure where it is in the Fed's purview, because that kind of money is going to drive the market for 2 weeks, which it is. Now, who do you tell? I mean, who's the buyer that night? Who's the seller? And the buyer is clearly, in $400 billion in one day. No matter what you say, Russell, it's a lot of dough. I mean, you got to wonder, is that part of the purview or what?
I don't know if that's a one off or not.
Yeah, I don't know either. I mean,
I know. I'm not being there. I can't formulate a good argument on that one.
Yeah, I can't either.
I always think everybody has the best of intentions, and I continue to be proven wrong throughout my life.
Well, let's talk about it next week, bud. Thank you. Nasdaq Futures up 6. Nasdaq Futures down 950. By the way, don't be afraid to buy Russell's book, Retail. Just saying. We'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at ptiprodirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.